everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Jason, WF2N, will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its pages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our club website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our event. As always, an application is readily available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Jason, WF2N, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions they would like to share, they are free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics, please let us know either here or use my email address, which is roy@ac2gs.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net tonight, Jason, WF2N. Good evening, Jason.
Roy, good evening to you, and good evening to everyone listening.
Okay, very good. Let us begin tonight. This is going to be the only technical net for a while. We're going to be on a little bit of a hiatus because in 2 weeks it's going to be Christmas Day, and I don't think anyone would really like to have a technical net on Christmas Day. And 2 weeks later, we are going to have our club meeting on January 8th rather than January 1st, because I don't think people would particularly care to have a club meeting on New Year's Day. So we're going to go on hiatus until the later part of January, but let's see if we could get something done tonight. So this is AC2GS, and this is the Technical Net. Please, if anyone has any questions or comments tonight for the Technical Net, give me your name and your call sign.
Boy, I guess it always seems like I'm the first one to check in. Good evening. This is Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo, Joe, in Gravesend, Brooklyn, New York, otherwise known as next door to AC2GS. Good evening, fellas.
I'm very glad to have you aboard. This has not been a good time in general for nets, I've noticed. Limark had an astronomy net, which folded last month because, among other things, this guy was just kind of doing a monologue routine, and I think he got even tired of that, and he just hit the eject button. And just last week, I was trying to log into the Limark scanner net. It clocked in at an incredible minute and a half duration. So the world is not kind to radio nets lately. I'm glad that I have you here so that we don't break the Limark scanner net record.
I guess that's a good thing.
Well, once again, I am Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, Roy here, net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club's technical net. We do this on the second and fourth Wednesdays of most months. As I mentioned, we're going to go on a little bit of a hiatus for a month because of scheduling conflicts. I'm sure that's not going to be a problem for anyone. If anyone else wants to check in tonight, and it would be nice, please feel free and check in. I appreciate the support, but I really would appreciate either a topic or a question or a comment or something to get the ball in the air. So this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Nut. Please hit that push to talk button, give us your call sign and your first name.
This is November 2, Oscar Bravo Echo, Jeanette Control. Over.
Name, sir.
And she will be E, the name is Mike. Mike Ida Kilo Echo in Sheep's Head Bay, Brooklyn. And technical comment, just to throw it out there, is our radio frequency, amateur radio cybersecurity, and security of our frequencies against non-licensed individuals who wish to use that for, you know, nefarious purposes and whatnot, and a cybersecurity infrastructure behind it. Over.
If that's a question or a statement or someplace in the middle.
So, I was wondering, I'm throwing it out there as a question for input. Over.
Well, as I'm sure you're aware, most hams are, there are annoying people for the most part. Without licenses, or sometimes even with licenses, who jam repeaters, jam frequencies, either other people's call signs, even when sometimes they actually do have a call sign, sometimes they don't have a call sign. It tends to be more of maliciousness in my experiences rather than any kind of conspiracy to undermine society or governmental systems. So, for the most part, I think it's guys with a lot of free time on their hands and a very strange sense of their own importance when they get on different frequencies and just make nuisances of themselves.
Roger that, and I definitely agree with that, and it's a shame that has to happen. We already have amateur radio as a service, you know, for races and Aries and whatnot, and those who go up to Mars. I was thinking, you know, push it up to amateur radio as an infrastructure. Over.
Fortunately, civil authorities are kind of going in the other direction. As you might have noticed, California kind of distanced themselves during their many forest fires from the amateur radio volunteer group as volunteer communicators. They kind of told them thanks, but no thanks. So unfortunately, it's going the other way. Also, the FCC has kind of degenerated almost to the point where it's just a licensing board to sell frequencies to major cell phone companies and, you know, generate billions of dollars of government funds. There's very little in the budget for correcting piracy and other things. Again, you may have noticed, we actually did have a gentleman with a license who was penalized, theoretically at least, $17,000penalties for kind of jamming a club's repeater. And it's sort of, I was actually amazed that they took the trouble of getting some people to bring their truck around to Queens, Long Island, record this guy doing it, and go the whole process. It only took them a few years. On the HF bands, if you're aware, the 14.313 was an infamous place of people just acting immature and childish. Sometimes they would identify. Sometimes they'd identify with their legitimate call sign and just act out like children. It took the FCC a better part of 8 or 9 years before they got their act together and sent them a bunch of penalties and charged them a lot of money and finally quieted down 14.313, only to have 7.200 kind of jump up and be the meeting place for people who were going through their third or fourth childhood.
To be like, Roger that, yeah, that's the sound, you know, I mean, I'm listening to you and it seems like almost you're describing CB radio in the 80s, you know. Unlicensed with, you know, 1 kilowatt modified kickers and radios and all that stuff. And, you know, just being immature and, you know, using foul language over the air. And the CB band is right dead smack in between two amateur bands. And I'm sure there's radios out there that could be modified, and that's no good. But no, I see a play on that.
It's very easy to modify an 11-meter CB rig to operate on 10 meters, especially once the CB started to have a single sideband function as well. In the old days, it was only amplitude modulated, so you had a problem getting it up to 10 meters single sideband without the proper modulation, demodulation circuits. But since they shifted over to a single sideband mode possible, that has been very easy. Matter of fact, unfortunately, we have a 10-meter net every Sunday morning, and we have this gentleman about a half a mile away from me who operates on one of the citizens' band frequencies. With such a dirty amplifier, with so many harmonics, that it actually interferes with our communications on 28.380. So, you know, you don't even have to modify a dirty final amplifier that's spewing harmonics to get onto 10 meters if you're a CB-er.
Roger that. I mean, they make... I mean, you can get them... I guess from China or something, and they just throw them together, you know, there's no filtering, you know, there's no IF imaging rejection or harmonic suppression or anything like that, and you're right, it just leaks RF all over the place, over.
Indeed, you know, although, with the exception of things like that, I haven't felt that much of a problem. Thankfully, with citizens banders. It's unfortunately, I think it's more human nature than it is whether it's amateurs or citizens banders. Sometimes the people get bored, sometimes they get malicious, sometimes it's a moment of quiet desperation that's the only way that they could show other people that they're still alive somehow. In some ways it's sad. When I've been jammed and interrupted, and I have been, everyone probably here has been, It's very annoying and very frustrating. But to think the kind of pathetic types of people who spend a lot of time and effort doing this, that's the thing that I can't quite wrap my head around, is the amount of time and effort. I've heard jammers at all hours of the day like they don't seem to sleep. There is a local repeater that shuts down at midnight because there was some guy out there who would just get there, you know, something like 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. He'd just sit there and keep ker-chunking the relays of the repeater into the wee hours of the night. And my mind can't figure out what kind of a person would spend that much time and effort just ker-chunking a non-used repeater. But they do it.
I'm just going to say this, and I'll leave the repeat open for other comments, obviously. You know, you're right, you know, the amount of time and effort they spend, and money, of course, they got to pay for this equipment. Why don't they just get an amateur radio license and, you know, be a good boy, you know what I'm saying? All right, it's N2BE. I'm going to turn it over back to you in the net for further comments. Over.
Mike, this is AC2GS, and it's very appropriate that the repeater did its little commercial calling out its call sign in Morse code. Once again, I am AC2GS. Name is Roy. I am the net control operator for this lovely little Kings County Radio Club technical net that meets most of the time on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month, second and fourth Wednesday at 9 p.m. If anyone else would like to enter any kind of either question or a topic or make any kind of a statement of a technical nature, please hit that push-to-talk button. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Name here is Ed, Suffolk County, Long Island.
Unfortunately, I got Suffolk County, Long Island, but the first half broke up a lot, so if you could repeat it.
November 2, Tango, Uniform, Uniform.
2, Tango, Uniform, Uniform. What's your first name, sir?
Name here is Ed.
Ed, do you have a question tonight?
I just happened to be scanning the band, and I heard you guys talking about chunkers. I've ran repeaters over the years. Of course, it was years ago, but one of the issues now is all these low-cost radios. You do get some CBers that are buying these things, you know, as long-range, you know, communicators, and they're using them as toys.
As a matter of fact, the FCC has issued notifications of Chinese manufacturers. You know, it's gotten to the point where you can go to one of those big stores that, you know, sell toilet paper by the gross, and on one of the racks is a Baofeng bunch of radios, and they're opened up on all the frequencies. You just, if you can figure out how to program them, you can transmit on all kinds of frequencies that are illegal. And so the FCC is aware of it. They've issued complaints about it. They'll probably issue penalties. There'll probably be some way of them kind of locking it down partially. But, yeah, that's always going to be a problem. Because ultimately, it's not that terribly difficult to get on the band. Again, to me, there's a big difference between getting on the bands, and I've heard jammers, sometimes they have these schizophrenic type of modes. They will steal a local ham's call sign, some guy who probably hasn't been on the air in 10 years but keeps renewing his license through the FCC. So they figure out these call signs, they use these call signs, and they make believe they're these people. And then other times when they're not in a social mood, they could chunk repeaters, or they make nasty comments, or they transmit blank carriers and do other things. So I've seen a lot of different permutations. I don't quite understand the destructive nature. I can sort of understand if someone's too lazy to go and get an exam, although Kings County Radio Club sponsors volunteer exams every 2 months, and we make it a painless experience. But I got to understand some people's innate laziness to deal with any of that. If they just want to kind of make believe they're hams and kind of, you know, behave. But I for the life of me, I don't understand the ones who just want to take a leak in the pool, if you will.
And the same thing here. I don't completely understand it myself. Doesn't seem to make any logic. But you know, I don't mean to downplay the CB band. But if you listen to the CB band, I mean, that's all it is. It's not, I would say, 80 to 90% just guys chunking on each other. Who has the strongest signal? You know, it's the mentality. You know, it's a different mentality than what we have here. We're here to communicate. They're basically, hey, how far can I go with this thing? You know. And as a little side note, the same issue came up. I was licensed since the 90s. Back years ago when Radio Shack used to sell ham gear, we had the same problem. And now, of course, it's the China radios. Back to that here.
Yes, yeah, I think this is going to be an ongoing problem. Again, because it's not that difficult to find and operate a radio, you know, even if you can't kind of go to a Walmart and buy a Baofeng that's in a blister pack, you can go to Hamfest and such and buy some guy's used equipment, or you can buy it on eBay. There's way too many different places that if you if you want to do it, you can do it. It's not that difficult. So I think the problem is, unfortunately, the mental health problems in our country, that people expend that much time and effort to just make life miserable for other people. That seems to give them some kind of benefit that I'm unaware of. How are you tonight?
Boy, hope you're having a great night. You know, in 1974, I don't know how long ago that was, I passed my novice test, my 5 words per minute, CW, you know. I built my own transmitter first from scratch, mostly from parts from an old television set. In 1975, I somehow passed the general and the advanced. You know, and I was doing like the whole world, with CW, 100 watts and a dipole. And I tell you, there's nothing like it in the world. And ham radio, there's nothing like it in the world. Wouldn't people want to really experience ham radio the way it's supposed to be experienced? Go ahead.
Fortunately, I guess the answer is no, not for every single person. What happens is people generally, I do it, I'm sure you do it, we kind of project ourselves into other people. And we figure that their mind works sort of like ours does, because it makes life much easier to figure out people if you work from outside in instead of inside out. And, but the problem is that doesn't seem to be what's going on. There's an infinite variation among fellow hams. There are amateur radio operators who feel that if you're not doing CW on the low frequencies, then you're not really a true amateur radio operator. And others, it has to be microwave, and others, it has to be UHF, VHF, and others, it has to be digital, and others, it has to be AM. And it is a lot, and that's great. If it floats your boat, if it makes you happy, then the hobby's working for you. So be it. I like exchanging ideas and opinion. I enjoy rag chewing a great deal. I enjoy understanding the underlying technology involved in it a great deal. Not that really interested in collecting what people sometimes call wallpaper, you know, certificates of worked all countries, worked all states. But I understand that. DXers, I understand that. Contesters, I understand that. But the beauty, I think, of our hobby is not only in the breadth, the width of so many different parts to this hobby, but you can take it as deep as you want to take it, or as shallow as you want to take it. So although there are people out there like myself, like you, who enjoy a good conversation and hope to be able to learn something from other people, there are other people who are just in it to get the radio to work, and there are other people who are there for one of 100 different reasons.
QSO. But, you know, ham radio has a lot of diversity in it. There's a lot of different things a person can do, you know, if they do it according to, you know, the procedure, you know. And then the other thing I wanted to say was that the value of two-way radio. Why do people get a license, you know, and what privileges does that license give you? And, you know, why is it so important for people to get a license to operate the radio? And, you know, what do they get out of it, you know?
As I said before, different people have different things that they want to get out of. The point of getting a license is purely, as far as I consider it, gives you the ability through the Federal Communications Act to transmit on a group of frequencies allocated for amateur radio. Without that license, you can listen to what's going on, but you can't interact. You can't ask questions. You can't ask what they mean by that. You can't involve yourself in the conversation. You're just a voyeur. And some people like being a voyeur. They like to listen, and they don't really want to talk. And we have people who have licenses who haven't been transmitting on the air for years. Some of them listen. They have scanners, and they listen to the different repeaters, but they just don't seem to want to go the trouble of transmitting or interacting. They would rather just passively hear it. So it depends upon the individual. Primarily, I would think that the people are motivated to get a license because they want to transmit. What they want to transmit, again, is different. Some people are just in it for FT8, digital modes, where you just kind of pass back and forth your RS codes and IDs and such, and you know, you make a long list of all the contacts you got. But, you know, there's lots of other things. There's the hotspots that you're familiar with. There's a large and growing number of different things that you can do in ways of transmitting radio frequency signals into the ether.
So, let's say I'm walking down the street, and I'm holding my HT, and I've just finished a conversation with someone, either on the DMR through the repeater, or through the analog repeater. Somebody comes up to me and asks me, what is that? I say, well, it's a walkie-talkie. So, what kind of walkie-talkie is that? I say, it's a two-way radio. I say, well, why do you need that? We already have a cell phone. You know, anybody can talk on the cell phone. I said, well, with this, first of all, I have a completely different set of friends, you know? We talk about different things that you wouldn't usually talk about on the cell phone. I can select any providers that I want, and I can talk for free for as long as I want. For as long as this battery will hold up, probably for 2 or 3 days. They say, wow, that's great. How do I get one? I said, well, first you have to get a license, but you can look it up on the internet. Amateur radio. Go ahead.
I haven't had quite that type of a conversation with too many people. Usually they don't have the faintest idea what any of this is. Every so often when we're at the Carrington Conference Room on the first floor of Methodist Hospital, where we have our monthly meetings, we'll have the crew that cleans up the place at night, and they'll check in to the room and see if it's empty. And every so often, very rarely, they kind of look around and they say, and what do you guys do? And usually we say amateur radio operators, and they say, what kind of music do you play? So unfortunately, public relation-wise, we haven't gotten the message across to too many people. Young people, they'll almost always start to show you their cell phone when you discuss amateur radio, even though cell phones are RF devices, so they're just doing it on a different frequency. But unfortunately, the magic of radio frequency that we were inured to as children seems to have escaped this present generation. They don't bother with the details. It's just a magic box made by Apple and Android, and you just kind of charge it up, and it does its magic.
With a cell phone, though, every bit and byte of data that goes through there, if you're streaming audio, listening to music, or whatever it is, you have to pay for them as part of your plan. So, you know, that's also, you know, part of the prescribed amount of data that you can consume. But with a two-way radio, you can have as much as you want for free. And you know, you're listening to FM broadcast with a pair of headphones. You know, you don't have to pay for that information. You know, you can get it, as much of it as you want, for free. The only downside is there's a lot of commercials. Go ahead.
Well, David, that's how you're paying for it. You're either paying it for it one way or you're paying for it another way. And the advertising model is one way of paying. Companies make billions of dollars off of commercials, so it makes a lot of money. The internet is running on a lot of commercials, and so they're monetizing your eyeballs. You know, you may not have to pick up your wallet and and give them your credit card number, but they're still getting value from you. And there are some aspects of amateur radio where the lines are very fuzzy indeed. When you use your hot links, hotspots rather, you basically are relying on an ISP provider that you're most likely paying for the service. And so, you know, monetary does get involved at the edges of the newer technologies of amateur radio.
QSL. But, you know, when the FM broadcast, you start playing commercials, you know, one after the other, you know, it's time to switch channels or to listen to analog repeaters or listen to CMR repeaters, different channels. You know, there's a lot a person can do, you know, to avoid paying with their ears, their time, you know. And I think two-way radio is the greatest thing in the world, and I'll never give it up. And there's a lot to do here, and it's better to do it according to the prescription, you know, where you start out studying and you pass your test, you have your radio, your first radio, you know, you're able to put up an antenna, you're able to communicate with people and get a lot out of it too. Go ahead.
On a level, I agree with you. That's what I did. That's what you did. And again, we kind of think upon the world the way we did things and the way we think of things. There are other people who don't have any interest in any of this. Two-way communication, that doesn't interest them. The young people, as a general rule, they don't particularly like to use the phone to talk on the phone. If you've seen young people in action, a lot of times what they're really doing is they're texting each other back and forth. And not really using the phone part of it. And, although again, that's RF. They are not aware of the phone, not interested in it for the most part. It's every so often you'll bump into some kid who's very interested in it, and that's nice. But unfortunately, you look at the general demographics of this hobby, and it's very heavily weighted to people of about the mid 50s to going on to 95. It's very rare that you have too many people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. I mean, my co-host Jason is a perfect exception to that rule, but otherwise it's sort of unfortunately filled with older guys. I still remember at one of our meetings, a gentleman came by and he was going to join the club and he was going to get a license. I think one of his reasons was that he was interested in drones. And if you have an amateur radio license, you can use frequencies to control your drones that are part of the amateur radio band. And at one point he turned to me and he said, gee, all you guys are old guys. You know, he was probably sound like 33, 34. And what he took away from the experience was we were a bunch of old guys, and I don't know, we never saw this guy again. I don't know what his drone history after that point was. But, you know, that's the problem. If we have to kind of reinvent ham radio for a younger population, we can't expect them to be enamored of things that we're enamored to.
Comment. I have noticed is that the newer generation, as a general rule, is you've gotten used to having the easy way out. You know, you just pick it up, you go in the store, you buy it. And I did have someone ask me, I got my cell phone, why do I need a radio? And I explained, well, the cell phone is great for, you know, one-on-one communication. The radio, you can talk to a whole slew of people at one time. You can have a round table. It's a different form of communication. And their reply to that was, oh, I do that on the internet. I go on to webcams or whatever. So, I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, I think a lot has to do with the technology. The technology has made it very easy for the new generation to communicate. So they figure, why the hell do I need a radio and a license and antenna when I could just simply go into the big box store, pick an item up, and I'm ready to go.
It's modern technology. Not only is it relatively inexpensive, although every time I shell out to Apple for those damn iPhones, I swear I'll never do it again. But also it's the consistency of the newer technology to the old. You know, part of the allure that we tended to have with amateur radio is that it's not a sure thing. There are days and nights where propagation conditions are awful. And then there are times that they're magical. And we look forward and we always hunt for those magical moments, but we suffer through the worst of sunspot cycle drops. And younger people kind of don't understand any of this and say, you know, I can consistently, you know, you talk about you string a piece of wire, you get together a relatively simple transmitter, and you can talk across the world. They'll just, again, pull out their expensive cell phone that someone else probably bought for them and say, well, I could do that at any time that I want. I don't have to wait for sunspot cycles. I don't have to wait for a certain time of the day when the band is propagating and not other times when ionization is causing background noise that obscures all the signals. And you know, it's difficult to explain it to them. If you haven't fallen in love with radio frequencies, it's difficult to get that feeling across to people.
When was the comment?
That comment up because before I was on you told me I was coming in kind of hitting the repeater kind of weak. So I kind of thought to myself, what can I do to hit the repeater better? So I just switched to my Yagi. And, you know, I think there's a perfect example of the hobby. You know, we have issues and we look for ways to work around them.
Hey, but unfortunately that requires a certain type of people that are looking to solve problems. If you're looking to solve problems, then that works out wonderfully. I'm a guy like that. You're a guy like that. David's, probably everyone listening tonight is like that. There are other people who don't want to be bothered. They either get someone to fix it, or they throw it away and they buy a brand new shiny one. So unfortunately, that's kind of not the culture is shifting ground right under our feet. I believe Jason wanted to make a comment.
Hey Roy, thanks for that. Thanks for letting me jump in. Just real quick, I just wanted to say that. When talking to younger hams, I usually find that when they say things like, oh, I can just communicate with my cell phone online, usually I tell them that method of communication is very impersonal. And you see a lot of the negativity with social media, you know, especially with politics and crap like that. People are just pretty nasty to each other online, but I tell them that with amateur radio, there's more of a goodwill type of vibe, especially when you're working DX or talking to people from other countries, as I explain to them, and you just meet random people, and you find out a little bit about their culture, a little bit about what they like about the hobby, and you know, before you know it, you might have an hour-long conversation, and sometimes it's just a really pleasurable conversation, which I find. I haven't had such conversations like that online and since I've been online since the late 90s. So, you know, I think that kind of resonates with the young folks there. This is WFTM back to you, Roy.
Jason, I appreciate hearing that, and please continue to tell people these things. I have all kinds of little theories. I think the problem with computers is the innate anonymous nature of it. You make up a name for yourself, you make up an identity for yourself, you make up an entire character. Sometimes you see that actually in Citizens Band as well, where they don't really ID per se. And when you develop a fake persona that you can hide behind, I think it becomes much easier to just be a nasty, angry, you know, person out there. The one thing generally you see in amateur radio is definitely self-identification, because that's the legal requirement, but there's a geniality and there's a fraternal or, you know, whatever the female version of fraternal is, nature among fellow hams. We tend to be reasonably nice and polite to each other, not quite abusive, that almost every conversation on the internet kind of degenerates into. There's some kind of concept, you know, like Moore's Law, I forget what they call it, that given enough time, a forum discussion inevitably leads to someone calling the other person a Nazi. So I think there's a problem with anonymity in computer conversations that thankfully are not present in amateur radio conversations.
I gotta tell you, I've had the most amazing conversations with people I never met, strangers, you know, because it is possible on the ham radio, and it's not possible at all with a cell phone. Go ahead.
I mean, it's not possible on the telephone to randomly connect with different people with different interests and communicate with them. I've had very interesting email exchanges with both hams and non-hams in my life. It's possible. It's just, and I used to, when I was younger, I was a member of CompuServe. That was one of the major bulletin board commercial systems, and I had great conversations going on with all kinds of different people. I was regularly talking to guys in high finance in Saudi Arabia. I was talking to dentists in Sheepshead Bay. All kinds of interesting people. Thankfully, at least in CompuServe, in the forums, for the most part, there wasn't anything nasty going on. The mode itself doesn't ultimately hogtie you to a certain type of behavior. I think there are other factors in the human psyche that tend to cause those trends.
I think it's like this. I think people get more of what they really want if they know what that is. And also, they have to know what they don't want. A person who doesn't know what he or she wants will never get that thing, because nothing is what they want. They'll just get frustrated and blame it on some other group or person that has nothing to do with it. It's their own issue. So I think it's better for people to know what they want, and they have to also be informed enough, you know, to make that decision. Go ahead.
Veering into the philosophy net that I tell people is held on the Limark repeater at 12:07 a.m. Monday morning, because it's a joke, because the repeater gets shut down at 12:07. You could say that it's more important that people know what they need rather than know what they want, because a lot of times people want things that they probably shouldn't have.
But I think need is the wrong word, because if you're saying the word need, that means it's an addiction. You know, it's like like alcoholism or, you know, some kind of big drug or substance or something. You know, in radio is, I think, more of what you want.
Into arguments of semantic. I'm not talking of needs as desperate addictions to things, but as the things that make your life worth value that you need to do it with, as opposed to things that people collect and they want just because they want them. Sometimes it's very benign. You know, if some wealthy person decides that he would like to have 300 different sports cars, If he can afford to buy them and maintain them, then so be it. But in other cases, it's not terribly beneficial to anyone, including themselves. So wants are not the same as needs. I understand where you might project that needs are more of addictions. I don't really hold to that kind of narrow definition. You know, there are things that we need in our lives to make our lives complete. There are things that we might want that look nice, and you can put it up on a shelf someplace, but we don't really need them. And so if it does no harm to want them and to acquire them, so be it. But just as any addiction, a want that is strong enough can lead to all kinds of problems. And people have destroyed their lives due to things that they wanted, especially when they couldn't have it. And, you know, again, not really philosophical questions I expected to discuss here at our technical net. Matter of fact, just to add in that I heard a recording of Jason the other night, and I agree with you entirely, Jason. We can pretty much discuss any kind of technological science subject that's of anyone's interest. I spend my Sunday nights on Limark's Technical Net doing a science talk, so I'm not averse to that at all.
Fulfillment without desire is better than desire without fulfillment, KG2.
We're veering a little too much into philosophy. I kind of just believe in the basic concept of do no harm. I guess I got it from my Hippocratic oath. As long as your wants, needs, desires has no negative impact to anyone else, whatever floats your boat. As long as you don't frighten the horses, as the old saying used to go.
Thank you, Roy, for this discussion. I think that if people got more of what they really wanted, they would be less fighting. But maybe I need to add some other words to
fine-tune it. I mean, one of the problems, and I've done more than a few stories on my science talk thing, where the life expectancy in the United States is dropping for the last 3 years. In some ways, it's from people getting more of what they want. And again, sometimes that's not a healthy thing. Just because you want it doesn't mean you need it, and doesn't mean you're a better person for it. But again, that's very into philosophy.
But I live in a one-apartment. I don't have a car. I eat very nutritious, healthy food. Mostly one-pan dinners, lunches, you know. My simple life, my simple HF radio, small radio, UHF, VHF, and about four or five HF. One I use all the time, and another one I hardly use. I have an old cell phone, Galaxy Note 4, and it works great, and I can take the battery out of it. You know, all the very simple things, you know. And I think I have pretty much what I want. I just wish that, you know, the world would be in a better way, that people would get along like you say, and, you know, people can get more of what they want, but hopefully, you know, why people are so addicted to big cars and the Golden Palace, I don't know.
David, what we tend to do is project ourselves onto the rest of the people in the world, and the unfortunate reality is, although human beings are very, very similar, there are differences. There are people out there who have $100 billion. And if you ask them if there was anything that they could have that they don't have now, what would it be? All too often, the answer will be $100 billion. So, you know, again, different people, different goals. You know, we too don't need that extra $10 billion. But there are people out there who do.
There's some people, you know, that reach a certain age in their life, and they say, oh, well, because I have $100 million, I want to live forever. I want to live forever at all costs. If anybody comes near me and says, well, you know, they'll want to outlive me, I'm going to get rid of them first, you know, so I can live longer. There are people like that.
If it was humanly possible, if the price was incredibly high, but it existed, I am sure that if you talk to any of those guys with $100 billion, and somehow there was some other guy who could guarantee that they would live forever if they just parted with $10 billion, probably when it got to that point, the money wouldn't quite be that important, because they figured that they'd make up that $10 billion over an eternity of living anyway. But yeah, it's, you know, again, you can't really project your wants and your needs and your desires and your built-in limiters to other people. Some people live very ascetic lives. They ask for very little, they need very little, they want very little. And then on the flip side, there's the other end of the spectrum where they want everything from everyone. You know, it's, again, it's all humanity, you know, that's what we are.
$500 to $600, you get a small radio, the joy from that transceiver, the contact, the conversations made, you know, on 20 meters, having this ability, you know, I'd say, you know, I'd rather be all day long than working in that real estate office and talking to people and lots of people in such a terrible way, you know, spending all my time in there. I could just be sitting here, you know, talking on my HF radio or on the VHF, UHF radio, saying, you know, there's nothing like it in the world, and it's communication also.
David, and that's you. It's not even all of amateur radio. I am sure you're aware. There's at least one guy who frequents the Limark repeater. Almost every time he drops in, he has to tell people about some major expense purchase that he had money to spend on. You know, he'll talk about his 100-foot towers. He'll talk that he has expensive ICOM radio that they manufacture. He'll discuss that he just came back from Timbuktu. Different strokes for different folks. This is a guy who likes to brag, who either spends a lot of money on all these things or just makes up. I don't know him. But he's an amateur radio. But, you know, there are a lot more that have nothing to do with amateur radio that just, they want things, you know. Not that they really need them, but they want them. They want a lot of things. Some people want very little. Some people want a lot.
Yes, sir. 100 watts and a dipole. Maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, I talked to a man in Sao Paulo, Brazil. 20 meters, we were rag chewing for like half an hour, maybe more. And at the end of the conversation, he wanted to tell me how important his antennas are. And he starts to describe all of them, you know, all the antennas he had in his antenna farm, you know. And the conversation didn't go away from his antennas until we said 73. You know, he had a picture of his garage. It looked like there was like 8 or 9 Ferraris in it, you know, like that. And I said, wow, this is really great. I get to talk to some heavyweight in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Guy that I talked to locally here on Simplex, he put himself a fancy pants rig because all his buddies on HF have the same rig. And he's been talking about for about the past year that he's never used it in fusion mode. So I said, hey, I got fusion, come talk to me. I gave him a frequency, everything. It's been a year, he's yet to talk to me on fusion mode, and yet he spent a fortune on this rig. So, I mean, there you go.
I'm sure there are guys out there that have made a beautiful station. I don't remember the guy's call sign, unfortunately. He was an electrical engineer. He decided that he was going to go into the hobby. So usually electrical engineers don't have that much of a problem passing the exams. He passed his exams. He got his license. And he kind of dedicated his life to designing the ultimate amateur radio shack, operating room. And it was beautiful. It was an engineering prowess, and no expense was cut. And I don't have the faintest idea if he ever actually used it. There are a few people like that where they have to have these things. They may not use them. They have sports cars, but they don't like to drive. They want a yacht, but they get seasick. You know, there's all kinds of versions of this going on. It's somewhat of a saving grace that amateur radio operators as a group tend to be a little on the cheap side. We don't open the wallet that quickly. So there's not as much of that, I think, as other groups of demographics. Again, it might be just age-related. I don't know what the parameters that limit that type of behavior. But there's a lot of guys out there who buy expensive, pretty things to have them, but don't have any interest in using them.
It doesn't matter how much you spend, how much equipment you buy, how many rigs you put together and fix, how big your station is, you know, and how you get your signal out. It doesn't really matter, because once you get all of that done and all of it is done, you know, the product of all of that, the conversations you get and the joy that you get from those conversations. I think if a person doesn't have a conversation with that particular experience of communicating, then, you know, all they think about is, like, you know, transistors and chips.
Again, I think, unfortunately, you're kind of projecting other people. To you, it doesn't mean anything. It's the end results that count. And to me, and again, to probably most of the people listening tonight, is the same way. But there are other people that's not the point of their exercise. The point of their exercise is bragging rights. There's a guy on that repeater. I think if he couldn't brag that he had to interrupt his day to go down to the BMW dealership and lease a cherry red sports car for his wife, if he couldn't exchange that bit of information to poor schlubs who aren't going to be getting a cherry red BMW sports car, it would ruin his day. So, you know, again, different strokes for different folks. I would suggest to try not to project yourself onto everyone, because that doesn't really work very well.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not projecting it on anyone. People can do whatever they want. Most people don't know what they want, so they never get what they want. They get pissed off. But this only applies to me, you know. It's like when I make an artwork, you know, I make the artwork for me. And if other people like it, great. If they don't like it, it's okay, too.
That's a reasonable way of dealing with the world. Let me just break in and ask if anyone has any somewhat more technical questions tonight, because we kind of took a philosophical left turn. I am Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. My name is Roy. I am the net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And if anyone has any questions or comments of a technical nature that they'd like to introduce, please feel free, hit that push to talk button, give me your call sign and your first name.
To Charlie Victor.
Victor, what's your first name, sir?
Zorro Victor.
Yes, to Charlie Victor, what's your first name? Glad
glad to have you aboard, William. You have any comments or questions tonight?
Know how you're receiving the signal.
Receiving it well, for the most part, full quieting. Early on when you first transmitted, there was a little breakup of it, but the last few transmissions have been clear.
So I'm just testing out the radio.
I think you're talking before you push the button or something, because I'm getting the first fragment of your sentence cut off, but again, it's full quieting.
Okay.
Well, you know, we're here most of the time on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month at 9 p.m. going on. We do a little technical net here. We try and discuss technical topics and what have you. So please, if you find yourself around your radio on one of those second and fourth Wednesdays, feel free to drop by and hello.
I have a technical question, AC2 Zorro Victor.
Give me your question.
I'm trying to use the Chirp software to reload into a different radio, and I don't see how it could ever possibly work.
Chirp works in mysterious ways. You have to kind of understand that it's freeware, so it's not quite as nicely polished as something like RT Systems software is. Although RT Systems, you know, is a commercial venture, and you got to pay their money. One of the little weirdnesses of Chirp, I found at least, is that you have to kind of prime the pump for some strange reason, and you have to kind of upload from your handy tool to Chirp once at least before you can download to it. I don't know why, but I've heard that from more than a few people. I haven't really played that much with Chirp in the last few years. I kind of decided that my time was too valuable, so I've invested in RT Systems software. It's very nice software, and it works between different, there are different versions of it, but it uses the same database, and you can cut and paste it, and I find it worth the trouble and the expense.
Situation with it, and they said that you were supposed to be able to cut tape, and I was able to download a CSV out of one radio and out of the other radio, get the template, but it can cut tape.
Sound a little strange with your signal. It sounded like you moved your mouth away from the microphone or something, because just the audio just kind of went very low.
I don't know how much of that previous message you copied, but it was difficult to cut and paste between different radios.
Chirp, not RT Systems, I would assume.
Systems has a website.
I think it basically is rtsystems.com. If not, you can just do a Google for RT Systems. They're a reputable company as far as programming software for a large range of radios.
Great suggestion. I'm going to check that out tomorrow.
A lot of times they charge you for the programmable cables, because depending upon the manufacturer, if it's a Japanese company, they and the cables work the way they're supposed to, they don't. But if it's a Chinese one, because of the questionable nature of the cables, a lot of times they're using pirated USB serial conversion chips. They tend to require you as a part of the package to buy their cable. But I wish you good luck, and you know, if you have any questions about RT Systems, they are very good about answering questions. I have heard a lot of people who had little problems here, there, and elsewhere, and they write them, they email them, and they get back to them the next day, and they fix their problems. So it's a very nice company. It does cost you a couple of bucks, and like I said before, amateur radio operators don't really like expensive things. It's not that expensive, but it's certainly more expensive than Chirp. But I wish you luck, William, with that.
that the place that you put all your money is in a hole in the ocean.
Boats, but there are also guys who take all their money and put it in the air and call it their toy airplane.
Ham radio guy, we're just like trying to just bounce it off the ionosphere.
A lot easier not to spend a lot of money in this hobby, thankfully. I don't know how you do it if you're into boats or into airplanes or helicopters or things like that. So there's a lot more wiggle room with amateur radio, and it's probably why it collects more people who are a little tighter with the wallets than people who go into boats and planes.
Thank you very much for helping me with a couple of technical questions. I'll give it back to you, Control. Alpha Charlie 2, Zorro Victor out.
Very good, William, and welcome aboard. William's a member of our club and a new extra, and good to have you aboard, William. Charlie 2, Golf Sierra, and let me ask Joe, AC2AE, if you're still on board here. You checked in earlier than everyone. I didn't really ask you if you had any questions or comments today.
Let me get back on the repeater. I'm also listening on the input for stations that are far out there. I didn't have any questions, but listening to everything out there, I started to wander a little bit on the computer, and I came across an advertisement on QRZ for this thing called the Rake Pi. So I decided to go look up this Rake Pi and said, wow, this is pretty cool. It's a Raspberry Pi with a audio interface, so you can use your rake, so long as it's a software-defined rake, over the internet from either another computer, your phone, or however you log into your computer, or log into this particular item. So I was wondering if you've had a chance to take a look at it, and why the heck is it $279 when a Raspberry Pi board goes for $35? Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo.
Joe, you're talking about MSJ's interestingly numbered device. If I recall it, it's designated MFJ1234. So it's one of the easiest to remember MFJ designations. It doesn't require a software-defined radio. It requires, if you will, a computer-controllable radio. Anything with a CIV interface. And that could go, you know, that the old Kenwood TS-2000 had an RS-232 interface and a lot of transceivers that were made at the beginning of the 21st century had CIV interfaces where you would send simple ASCII characters and control parts of the radio. You could change frequencies, you could key up the transmitter and unkey the transmitter and change all kinds of settings, and then all you need is a USB sound card of some kind to transfer the audio from the computer interface to the radio and you're set. What they do is, I understand that having a Raspberry Pi is inexpensive. You're paying this guy who made a daughter board or a hat for the Raspberry Pi that does a lot of the extra functions that the Raspberry Pi doesn't do, and who wrote all the software, and there's all kinds of software. There's computer-based software, but there's also, I think, Android and Apple-based software that you can remotely operate your CIV-capable radios from your cell phone, any place that you want. So with some people, they don't need to do that. They have software that they can plug it into their local computer and then remote out to their cell phones. But I guess for those people who don't have that or don't want to be bothered to kind of spend the time of setting it up, it's one of those easy things. You put the money down, you plug in a couple of things, you turn them on, and they're there.
You know, I am very tempted to get one of these. I really like it. It's really ease of access because, from what I understand, it basically hooks directly up to your the Ethernet to your router. But I already have a very similar setup. The only thing that I have to do is, before I leave, I have to actually integrate my microphone into my computer, which I had to make like a little device so I wouldn't actually overload the actual radio going into the computer. So I had to kind of like rig that up to the audio a little bit. But other than that, I'm using the Yaesu FT950. It actually already has the plug that has the output for it at the back of the radio, so I had to fashion my own little input-output, you know, transmit and receive. AC2, maybe.
I mean, some systems are easier than others. Usually on you know, higher-end base stations, there are accessory ports that have, they have the CIV code inputs. They have audio output and mic inputs that parallel the you know, the front-based microphone inputs. So I don't really know the exact specs of what kind of accessories are available on the accessory inputs of the 950. But pretty much all of them have those types of things. You might need to set up a breakout cable that you mentioned. But it certainly is doable. It depends upon how easy you want life to be. Again, for a lot of these guys, they don't really have computers. They don't want computers. They might have been talked into a cell phone so that they could go on and talk to their grandchildren and see each other and such. But you know, I talked to someone on 10 meters this past Sunday who doesn't have kind of a computer in a shack, and he's happy to continue it that way. So, you know, it depends. It's not impossible to do it without the Rig Pi. It just is not that terribly expensive, and it's kind of fully operational. The only thing you do is make a couple of connections with audio inputs and CIV inputs, and then plug the Ethernet to your router, and you're in.
Definitely makes things a lot more convenient, I gotta say, and it is a very interesting device, and it is something to look forward to. But you know, and another comment is something that was said earlier today. Ham radio operators don't consider certain parts of the hobby ham radio. The only thing I could really say to that is that they're really missing out on a lot. You know, that's all I can say, is they're really missing out on a lot. AC2AE.
Joe, but, you know, I mean, the demographics of our hobby kind of bend towards cranky old guys. And cranky old guys, I mean, I think you haven't earned your bones in this hobby if some old hasn't told you that you're the problem with amateur radio today. I think it took me all of about 3 weeks to be told that by an old codger, and I consider it a badge of honor.
It was many years ago with DMR. I had one bad experience with DMR, and that was it, man. I had given it up.
You know, I mean, different strokes for different folks. I do not go around saying this is amateur radio, this isn't amateur radio. I mean, you know, if you're happy with it, great, wonderful. It's not my business.
All right, guys. My wife brought home a piece of chocolate cake, and she wants me to go share it with her. So she's getting ready for bed. So I'm going to go share this piece of chocolate cake with her, guys. Roy, great net tonight, man. Awesome net. And I'm going to have to step out.
Much, Joe, and give my regards to the missus and my thank yous for the hard work that she put into the party last week. It was a great party and one that will go down in the history books of Kings County Radio Club.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you. I will definitely tell her. All right, guys. I'll talk to you all later. AC2, AE.
Charlie 2 Golf Sierra Roy, a control operator for the Kings County Radio Club, Technical Net, meeting here on the second and fourth Wednesdays of most months. We're going to be on hiatus for a whole month, unfortunately, because of scheduling problems with all the holidays. One is Christmas Day, and the other is the meetings of the club will be the following week than usual because of New Year's Day. Anyway, does anyone else have any questions of a technical nature or any comments of a technical nature? Otherwise, I'll bring up our lovely little Kings County Radio Club Technical Net puzzle for today. Hopefully, everyone's had a chance to go over to the website and taken a look at it. If not, I'll recite it first. An alternating voltage can be measured with a bridge rectifier and a moving coil meter. The sensitivity of such an arrangement is determined by, and then you have four different choices to choose from. The first choice is voltage drop across rectifier. The second is momentum of the meter. The third is capacitance of the switch on the meter. And the last, D, is resistance of the probes. So that's the technical question for tonight. People ruminate on it, and I'll ask right now if anyone has any questions or comments of a technical nature for the Technical Net tonight. Let me ask if anyone would like to answer the TechNet puzzle for tonight. Please, if you're interested, just hit that push-to-talk button. Recite it one more time, just in case people didn't get a chance to hear it, and hopefully someone will offer a answer. We don't take any points off for getting the answer wrong. This is all just an exercise in learning a couple of things. The question is, an alternating voltage can be measured with a bridge rectifier and a moving coil meter. The limit to the sensitivity of such an arrangement is determined by what factor? Your choices are A, voltage drop across the rectifier, B, the momentum of the meter movement, C, the capacitance range switch on the meter, and D, the resistance of the probes. So if anyone would like to play, please. I know some people don't like to volunteer, but this will be painless. Just, have a little fun.
Momentum of the voltage meter?
Momentum of the voltage meter would cause an immediate a kind of a misreading. But it would balance out. It would just be slow to, it would correct over time. So initially, the momentum would swing past the point of an accurate reading, and then it would kind of bounce back and forth, and eventually momentum would kind of dissipate. So it wouldn't really decrease the sensitivity. It would decrease the accuracy immediately, but over time, not really.
Just for identification reasons, W2SDL, Steve from Brooklyn, signing in.
I think that the situation is more about the magnetism and the amount of coils. So that wasn't one of the
things. Again, I'm not quite sure what's happening, but now, the last time, you kind of were about 50% noise. Maybe you're running on a battery that's running out of juice?
About that, just moved over 2 feet.
That's the nature of RF. A lot of people kind of are into this reciprocal law, but just because you can hear something doesn't mean that you can transmit just as well in a particular position, especially under the circumstances of repeaters where the frequencies of transmission and reception are different.
I thought the answer was different from any of your choices.
I mean, you're more than willing to have that. I tend to do trick questions over at Limark. I tend to not do really trick questions here. because I think I would annoy more people here. So it should be one of those four answers. I'm sorry that you don't apparently agree with my question.
Don't understand, Alpha Charlie 2-0 Victor.
Anyone else with any ideas on the subject? Basically, my general understanding, as we know, sensitivity is a minimum input magnitude that can be detected and measured. So if it was the momentum of the meter, you know, might introduce some a little initial error in the meter reading, but it's kind of self-corrected over a very small interval of time. And capacitance of the range-setting rotary shouldn't really affect the meter sensitivity, and resistance of the voltage probe would introduce maybe errors in accuracy of the measured values, but it wouldn't really limit the device's sensitivity. And all solid-state rectifiers possess a characteristic known as forward voltage drop. When it's forward biased into conducting electricity, the diode, depending upon what it's made of, has a different voltage drop. Silicon-based diodes tend to have about a 0.7 volt forward voltage drop. Germanium-based diodes have a 0.3 volt forward voltage drop. I mean, that's one of the reasons why when we were kids and we had a crystal detector set, almost every single time our detector was a germanium-based 1N34 diode, because there was less of a forward voltage drop, you could pick up a weaker RF signal, especially since you aren't amplifying it with anything. So basically, my understanding and what I've read is that the sensitivity of something like this is limited by the voltage drop of the bridge rectifiers. It makes sense to me. Does it make any sense to you, William?
That makes total sense. The way I see it is that I had a crystal radio before, and I had a cat whisker, and I used to have it in radio with the cat whisker. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But mine was my cat.
In the really old days, before there were 1N34 germanium diodes, you didn't have much of a choice. Any kind of material with an oxide, different types of minerals. I saw there was a YouTube of a gentleman who recreated his crystal radio set with a tarnished 1 pence piece. Using that in the same way that cat whiskers are used. So a lot of different objects can become nonlinear devices. The whole point of the exercise is that when RF meets a nonlinear device, it acts as an internal mixer to amplitude-modulated signals. And it does the sum and difference, and the difference is the audio signal, and you don't need to really filter the RF out of a little piezoelectric earpiece, and so it just naturally detects the audio component of the amplitude modulated signal just because it's a nonlinear device.
At my first crystal set, I basically wound the coil on a toilet paper tube and ran the thing back and forth across that, change the channel, and I could get different AM radio stations and stuff like that. But the key of it all was having that kind of electric
ear. It's very unusual. Your audio just kind of, it's not like, it's still full quieting, but just the audio portion just gets lower and lower and lower. I've known people that kind of move their head and their microphone out of sync with each other. I take the incredibly lazy man's approach. I have a nice little lightweight headset so that I can put my head 180 degrees in the opposite direction and I'm still pointing at my microphone.
Because suggestion for next time, AC2 Zorro Victor.
I really like using headsets. It might be a bit of overkill, but I don't know. It just, I mean, I went to the trouble of getting this very nice Heil PR40, very nice microphone. It's on one of those extended arms. I can swing it into position, but I still have to point my head forward at least to talk on it. So I don't know. I've gotten used to these headsets, and I like using them. But I'm glad to have you aboard, William. I hope you'll be a regular member of our little technical net get-together in future. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club technical net. And we've gone to 10:30, which is amazing to me. Just in case, if anyone else has any comments or questions or topics that they'd like to address before we shut her all down, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk button. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be January 8th. We offer a pre-meeting technical question and answer session, much like this net, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. as time allows. Our regular general meeting starts at 8 o'clock and continues until anywhere from 9 to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. A weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month, usually, but will be on hiatus for a month. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology. That's every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater, KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. We offer an audio stream of the Fusion net on the internet, as well as all audio transmissions on our club repeater at stream.kc2rc.com. Also, if you have a hotspot, it is accessible either going through XLX, XLS, and YSF. There are some instructions on our website of how to set up your hotspot for many of those different servers. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is available on our website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this TechNet, simply address your email to roy@ac2gs.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, 3 Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut this all down. And we'll be back to do it all over again in January. And you're all welcome to join us. That will be January 22nd, by the way. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially to my co-host, Jason, WF2N. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, and I'll be going clear and getting the heck out of here. Everyone, have a great Christmas. Have a great Happy New Year if I don't talk to you before that. AC2GS, clear.
Roy from WF2N.